The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and it's a great day. It's a great day because it's the week of the U.S. Open. It's Tuesday, June 12th, so the guys are still in the midst of their practice rounds at Shinnecock for the 118th U.S. Open, but this is the week, and I love major weeks, as I'm sure almost all of you do, when it's the Masters, the Open, the British Open, the PGA, and in Frank's case, the Players' Championship.
Yep.
They all count as the big-time golf tournaments, and so this is a really cool week. We're going to be talking about that. We have a couple of special guests. Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio will be joining us very shortly, and we also have Bob Bupka, our good friend, host of The Grill Room on TuneIn Radio and a lot of other platforms. And Bob will be joining us from his backyard, virtually, where he grew up. He is from the Shinnecock area, right there around the golf club. So he'll be joining us live on site from Shinnecock here in just a little bit. I mentioned Frank Bassett earlier, who has just recently gotten back from his second home. His early, actually, a childhood home, right? Frank, in the Memphis area,
that
where
is.
You grew up.
That is. Grew up just across the river up north of Marion, just about 12 miles. West Memphis, Arkansas, but Bassett, Arkansas. Yeah. It was fun.
And just
fun
and
being
just
back.
So we can, if we can get this out of the way, did you get your cheese dip or your cheese, whatever you got from
Poncho's cheese dip, baby.
Is that covered?
Two coolers full of that stuff came back with me. You betcha.
Oh, it has to. Cheese that comes in a bag, it can't be bad, can it?
It's good stuff. It is good stuff.
It's got to be some good stuff. So, all right, well, let's not keep them waiting any longer. Earl Forsey, again, the voice of PGA Tour Radio, and will be making the calls for the week and has been on actually, good question. How long has he been doing PGA Tour Radio? I'll ask him that when we get him here. So, Earl, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. I'm guessing, being kind of a lifelong Washington, D.C.-er, that cheese in a bag out of Memphis may not be the most appealing thing to you.
Not necessarily. I love cheese. My dad's from Wisconsin, so I'm a cheese guy. And I remember going up there as a kid and getting the bags of curds.
There you go. Down in flames, Matthews. Awesome. Down in flames, baby.
Yeah, so I'm a cheese guy. I'm a cheese guy.
Okay.
I do plenty of whining, so I got to have some cheese to go along
with. There you go.
Well, you're
not whining this week, buddy.
No.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah, what about those Capitals? Let's give you some props right there. That's the first championship for D.C. in like 25 years or something, Earl?
26, to be exact. Who's counting? 1992, yeah. Super Bowl 26, Redskins beat the Buffalo Bills. That's the last one. Major one, you know, soccer and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't count that. It's a big deal because, you know, it's a town that's been just – there are people who grew up here that don't – see, I remember the Redskins era, the 80s, you know, and I grew up on Bullets basketball, you know, with Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld,
yeah.
Mitch Kupchak, when they won a championship. So I remember back to 77, 78 when they won, and it was a big deal. So – but then, you know, you go through the Gibbs era, the Redskins, when they won three Super Bowls in that span of whatever it was, 11 years, 12 years, something like that. You always expected, you know, every few years to have a championship. That was a great team, great coaches, all that stuff. And then it ended. Bad management with the Redskins, you know, the Capitals never getting over the hump. Nationals come to town. They've had their issues, you know, in the playoffs. It's always some sort of injury or disappointment. It's just always... there's always some punch in the gut or, you know, as stinging the police, the one line in their song, a humiliating kick in the crotch, basically, is what has been like being a D.C. sports fan for a quarter century. And you know, this kind of came out of nowhere. This was a team that, you know, had lost players after, you know, being the best team in hockey for 2 years in the regular season and coming up short again. And, you know, I said to someone this at the end of the season, they were playing well. I said, you know, expect the unexpected when it comes to sports. When you're least expecting something, that's when things happen. And that's what happened with this team. They came up every big goal, every bounce went their way. And that's what you need to in any sport to win championships. And then they win. So I'm watching it the other night, and my kids are, I have two teenage boys. And one really could care less. He's on the phone texting friends and playing video games. The other one, a little bit more, but, you know, he watched the end of the game, and that was about it. I mean, for me, I remember when the Bullets won, because that was before the Redskins run. I was a kid, you know, growing up watching that. And we used to have to watch games on tape delay. The home games weren't shown live.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the day. So you didn't have a problem with internet. There were no computers or anything like that. So you would avoid, you know, the mentions, the news, and everything. So the games would be then shown like immediately after they were done. So an 8 o'clock tip would be shown like 10:30 would come on. So I would stay up and watch those home games playing. And that was the day they were playing San Antonio then. Gervin and the Iceman and the Spurs and the 76ers back then. George McGinnis and the Sixers, you know, all those teams. And I went out and I'll never forget in my deck, my old house in Silver Spring. And it was just my celebration. I was like making noise, banging pots and pans and stuff. I'll never forget that. You know, I was just so. And then the Redskins started winning. And so, yeah, it's like a weight's been lifted off the shoulder. Wait till you see that parade today. They applied for this parade with the estimate given to the D.C. government was 100,000 people. I'm guessing there's that now down there. I've got to try to wait and make my way through it. I don't know how I'm getting downtown today. I've still got to get there. I'm hoping I can. I will at some point. Probably won't be much different than any other day working through traffic in D.C. But, and you saw what happened after the win. You've seen all the videos. If anybody follows me on Twitter, at Earl Force, I've been tweeting all this stuff all week. They stayed up. I mean, first of all, is there any better place to win a championship than in Vegas to go out and celebrate?
I mean, my goodness.
They went to the MGM. Apparently, they shut down that place. They went to the EDM club there. They shut that down when it closed, like 4 a.m. So I wake up Friday morning, and they're still, they just kind of, like you're seeing the tweets, they've just kind of still, like, started breaking up. And that was like 8, 9 a.m. Eastern. So, and then they come back to D.C., and they've basically been on a 72-hour bender. It's kind of like Basketball Players Championship. This is what it is.
Pretty much true.
And there's a lot of truth to that. It's just they've been taking the cup around. They've sung We Are the Champ. I mean, it's great. The fans are loving it. People show up at bars downtown and stuff, or in Virginia, wherever they are, and there's the cup. And they're just celebrating with fans, singing We Are the Champions. Like, I mean, it's great. It's great to see players. I mean, this stuff means so much to fans, and people think the players don't care. Is there any bigger star in his sport than Alex Ovechkin? No. He is. He's one of the guys. And he has become now, Riggins is an icon in town because of all the stuff he used to do and, you know, on and off the field. And Ovechkin has become legend in this town now because he's acting like a kid. And it's good for him because, man, a lot of people are really happy about it. Look, my second thought is, and this is me, I'm not raining on the parade or anything. My second thought after, wow, this is great. It's unbelievable. They won a championship the other night. My second thought turned to, man, what's going to happen here if the Redskins break through again? And, you know, because it is still a Redskin town. And it's great. But for me, there's just that little in the side buried back, you know, deep inside that, man, I wish this were the Redskins. And, you know, you never know now.
It could be the Nationals. I mean, your Nationals are looking pretty good. They're in first place.
Well, maybe the same type of year for them, too. I mean, they're banged up. Everybody's on the DL, and it was a tough start for them, and, you know, they're not dominating like they were. So, same type of year. I mean, maybe it's one of those things. And they have totally embraced the Caps. Their manager, Dave Martinez, has been wearing cap stuff, and that they had the celebration the other day. They brought the cup to Nats Park on Saturday, and I don't know if you saw that. Ovechkin threw up the first pitch, sailed one, and then it got a mulligan on it. And they were supposed to, him, Oshie, all these guys show up, and they were supposed to leave after that. They didn't. They went upstairs to one of the boxes, and they were just lining up empty cans the whole time. That started their day in D.C. I mean, that's what they've been doing, and good for them, because
God bless
them. If I weren't working this weekend, I would have been trying to find them tagging along somewhere and doing something. I don't know, but they're just having a great time, and I'm kind of jealous by it because they have just, you should, they've been just having a bender, just enjoying everything. And DC is electric because of it. I mean, you're just so desperate for anything, and the Caps are one of those teams that always had, there was always some angst, something going wrong, and you never know when something like that, you said, breaks through. Wait, what could happen in Boston? I grew up, my best friend growing up was a huge Met fan, and I was sitting there watching that game with him that night, the World Series, when Buckner boots the ball. You know, and that's kind of the epitome of what Boston sports was. And then they fall 3-0 to the Yankees 1 year, and lo and behold, something happened. And they came back and won a world championship, and look how many, well, I know they've got Brady and guys like that, but look, all the teams in Boston, that was kind of the beginning of it. You know, that turnaround, they shouldn't have beat, they were done. They were down 3-0 against the Yanks, and then they've been printing championships up there ever since, all the teams. So you never know.
You never know. You never know. We're talking with Earl Forsey, voice of PGA Tour Radio. And, okay, let's get into a little bit of golf. It's a big week, obviously. The U.S. Open, it's at Shinnecock. Sorry, go ahead.
Back up to last week for a minute. Hey, let's don't forget, that was 60 years of a golf tournament, the FedEx St. Jude Classic, with the famous True Temper golf shaft with the grip and the signs that say, "Hush, y'all." That are going to go away now. It's not going to be as kind and gentle as it has been. But what a great tournament that was in Memphis, guys. I mean, just to be there, the electricity on Sunday, on 18, when you know who did you know what, while you know who was calling it. The former, I guess, what's that, Rookie of the Year, and what year? The year he beat out Mickelson? Mark Carnival made the call. And let's hear the call real quick and let Earl comment on that.
9-iron from 169. This is right at the flag stick. Lands right next to it. Hops into a hole. Are you kidding me? A hole-out eagle to close the deal for Dustin Johnson. He finishes at 1900. Dustin Johnson is the winner of the 2018 FedEx St. Jude Classic. Does it in style. 500 FedEx Cup points are deposited into his bank account. Dustin Johnson, his 18th career win, moves back to number one in the world ranking, and my God, does it in style. He delivers the goods here at the FedEx St. Jude Classic.
Heck of a way to walk off. I looked at Stankowski. Yeah. Paul was next to me, and I just looked at him, and I just said, that is, and I said, right after Carney's call finished up, I said, that's one hell of a way to finish off a win, isn't it? I mean, that's the epitome of who he is, and that's why I test, and now the rankings again, the numbers say it. All due respect to all these other players, and not taking anything away from Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, and all these other guys, McIlroy and Day, and Dustin Johnson's the best player in the game. I mean, it's just, it's simple, and now the numbers show it. And the other thing I added toward the end of that, we're kind of tight on time, but there's this whole thing of never having won the week before and then going on to win a major. Are you gonna discount Dustin Johnson's chances because he did that last week? I'm not.
No way. Yeah, he's so hot right now. And Earl, you know what, you see him and talk about him week in and week out. To be out there, we were right there at my, you know, the house that you see on TV that says I Love FedEx, across from 18. It's a friend of mine's house. So we were there standing on the balcony watching that. And I almost fell off the balcony. I mean, everybody was jumping up and down and screaming.
Frank, you're kind of like the Forrest Gump of golf. You're everywhere, aren't you?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. Right, have a good time. But, oh, my God. Yeah. And, of course, that tournament means so much to me because I've been going to that tournament, guys, since I was 10 years old, when it was at the old Danny Thomas tournament at Colonial Country Club. And it just kind of brought a tear to my eye because it's over. The FedEx St. Jude Classic is gone. It'll be the FedEx Invitational, a St. Jude Invitational now, a World Golf Championship event, which will be huge for Memphis. But to lose that tournament, but to lose it in that way, that was pretty cool. That was a way to go out for the last shot on the last day.
Well, it's still, what do you do? I mean, he had a great day, great week.
Oh, yeah.
And really, the scores early in the week, he shoots 67 opening round with a double bogey. I mean, and Carney mentioned a couple of times, well, this round could have been a lot better than that. It was true. And then, you know, he shoots 63. And Carney's follow him. And one of his lines then was at the end, it's like, man, that was a really easy 63. And it was. I mean, it was like, you know, nothing. It was just kind of like up and downs and making birdies. I mean, you know, and a hole out. And then, you know, and then he just played okay early. I mean, he let the tournament come to him, putting him alongside. That was tough. It was always going to be tough for him. Look, you're playing with maybe the best and is now, again, the best player in the game. And You would have had to play maybe the best you've ever played. That still might not have been enough. It was one of those situations. He got off the shaky start. Give him credit. he hung in.
He did.
You know, and he got it within two again. And that place, you know what happens? I mean, DJ hit water off the tee this week that we didn't, you know, shouldn't be in play. But, you know, so that place, you know, like 10, 11 different places water can come into play. So you're looking at just one little mistake and the winds came up. You know, double bogeys. I mean, you can they're all over the place there. So the two-shot lead was nothing. And then, you know, DJ kind of hit that one. You know, before that hole out, he almost had another one a few holes before that when he hit one close for the birdie to kind of open things up. And then what a way to finish. But if you're Andrew Putnam, probably you're seeing that. And you know what? I would think of him as like, well, probably not, you know, a little disappointed the way you played, but probably nothing much I could have done. To beat this guy today. And, you know, he still had a great week and his best finish, too.
Yeah. He pulls the ball out of the hole, and what does he do with that ball? His first instinct, what does he do with that golf ball? He walks over to one of the St. Jude patients, one of the little children, and gives it to the kid. It just class act guy. Nice, you know, I've become a bigger fan than I ever have been of DJ. I really have.
But having said what you just said, Earl, the history is still there, and unless I misread something, nobody has ever won a U.S. Open having won the previous week. And now we're in the 118th U.S. Open, so I don't know how far back they can really check that, but that is kind of a bit daunting. I don't know why exactly that would be. But
it's tough to do it back-to-back weeks. I mean, how many times guys win back-to-back weeks? Not very often, unless your name was Tiger, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
So that it's kind of a daunting, wow, it's never happened. But how many times has it happened in general? Not much. So you narrow that down to just one week every year. Well, you know, you could go back probably a lot of tournaments and say no one's ever won the week before and won this tournament. I bet you could do that with a lot of tournaments. And I know it's a U.S. Open. I know it's special. I know it's different. And I know it's happened in other majors where guys have gone in and won. But and it's just the U.S. Open is such a, you know, like, and I grew up playing tennis. The French Open just finished up. The French Open is such a
11-time winner. 11 French Opens.
Yeah, God. I know that's crazy, but it's a strange major in that so many things have to come together with that, with the clay and the surface and all. It's just it's always been kind of a strange where you think you know what's going to happen going in, you don't. And the U.S. Open, and I'm not saying the word strange, but I'm saying the U.S. Open is such a unique kind of by itself entity in golf because of the course, the setup, the conditions, the pressure. You know, it's hard to pick a winner because a lot of times the guy, you know, kind of out of nowhere has come in and played really well and stolen that thing when you think you know what's going to happen doesn't necessarily happen. It's just because it's such a unique entity and a different dynamic at that tournament. But you know, Scott just won one a couple of years ago, so he's certainly capable. He's the best player of the game. He's certainly capable.
Yep.
He's won multiple majors. He's certainly capable, and he's probably the hottest player in the game of golf right now. And that's saying something because there's a lot of them, and you just never know.
That's funny you said strange because winning back-to-back U.S. Opens is sort of a feat also, and Curtis Strange was, of course, a back-to-back U.S. Open winner. So I don't know that Koepka can pull this off this year. I just don't believe it can happen.
But I'm curious. It leads me to a question for both of you guys, for Frank and for Earl. Who is this year's Brooks Koepka? Because I don't think anybody, not too many people outside of his immediate family, was going, this is Brooks's week. He's going to win the U.S. Open last year. And yet, there, of course, he did it and played extremely well. So who would be, not necessarily a long shot, but is there a dark horse that you guys think could be the Brooks Koepka this year?
50-1, yeah. Mark Leishman. I'd take it.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah.
What do you think, Earl?
I like 50-1.
Well, I mean, Koepka was so dominant last year. That was the other thing. I mean, he's, you know, matched McIlroy's under par total, won easily. But, yeah, I don't know. And, you know, who knows about Shinnecock? Who knows? The setup, we kind of have heard about things. And, you know, it's going to be tough. And if any past is any indication, again, weather, wind, whatever, it can be just throw everything in, you know, up in the air. I don't know. Maybe a guy like Tony Finau, who's won before and has perfectly capable. I don't know. I think you're looking at the usual cast of characters to me this week, because so many of them are playing well coming into this thing. You've got six multiple winners on the PGA Tour this year. And I just think one of those guys, either it's DJ or Rose or Justin Thomas, somebody, Spieth. I mean, there's a guy that's flying under the radar, Jordan Spieth. He's trying to win. You know, I mean, and that would have surprised you if this is the week, you know, he finds that putter finally. Because other than that, he's been playing statistically really well. Maybe as better as well as he ever has in some instances. Just can't get the putter working.
What about that grouping, though, with Dustin, Justin, and Tiger? That's is Tiger going to try to keep up? Can Tiger keep up with DJ driving? No. Is he going to try? Probably, you think? I don't know.
DJ's ridiculous, by the way. Yes, I mean, not that we didn't know it, but he was hitting three woods. I mean, like, with 330 carries, you know, and hitting at 350. Yeah, that's just, it's just unbelievable what he can do. I don't know. Tiger. I think Tiger's probably looking forward to the challenge. I mean, I think that kind of gets his juices flowing a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, at least a half a dozen times, Dustin's going to be called Justin. Justin's going to be called Dustin. I mean, that's just the nightmare. It's going to happen, like, probably in the same round.
Oh, sure.
Front line six times. Sure.
Well, this will be a little different broadcast team this week at Fox. You know, this is Fox's show this week. So we'll see what happens, because when you only do one or two tournaments a year on TV or on radio, it's not the PGA Tour radio, you know, classy, great team that we have out there.
And we'll talk about that, Fox, because they've gone now for, is it a couple of years into their contract now doing the U.S. Open, and there's been a lot of criticism. So we'll see how it goes this weekend, and then we'll talk about it next week and see how all that.
No, I'm free this week. If they need some help, someone can pass.
Yeah, if they need somebody, you'll be there. You'll be there.
The best anchor in all of golf. What are you talking about, man?
Amp up the coverage. I'm available for the right price.
maybe we'll cover a local tournament somewhere, Earl. We'll just
I'm covering local sports this week. I'm covering, and I'm going to watch some movies I haven't seen this week.
Let's go over to Woodmont. Let's go over to Woodmont Country Club in Maryland and play there.
I don't know anybody that gets into Woodmont. I don't travel in those circles.
Yes, you do. You know somebody who can get you on Woodmont. Her name is Laura Brina. Her dad was one of the founders of that club. Our good friend Laura, who co-hosts with us, Tim. She's a member there, so she can get us on.
There you go.
Yeah,
Let's go, Earl. Hey, Earl, before we let you go, and I know you got a busy day. And by the way, you did say you are going to go to the parade later today.
No, I'm not going to be actually at the parade. I didn't rate that assignment. I'm going to be in studio, kind of trying to pull things together and everything. I didn't get. Why would they want anybody that's been covering DC sports for 35 years?
Did I detect bitterness
with sarcasm? Yeah,
they didn't even give him the beads to throw.
But that's it'll be too many people there anyway, Earl. I mean, you know, you'd be better off in a nice air-conditioned studio and everything, and not to have to deal with it or any of that kind of stuff. But before we let you go, so we talked some Shinnecock. We're looking forward to it. We all get excited about this and whatever might happen. But sticking with DC. I got to give you last word. It is still Redskins town, and Jerry Jones the other day was saying something about he thinks the Redskins, rather than Philadelphia, might be the team to beat in the East. Now, of course, that could be a dig on Philadelphia. It could be a thinly veiled challenge to the Redskins or whatever. Your thoughts before everybody gets heading to training camp?
This may take a while.
What do you think?
I'm a Redskins. Come on, I'm a Redskins show. I'm sorry. That's my team, and that's covered them for. And I still, that's the one. And maybe, like I said the other night, my reaction. I've just become so hardened to the disappointment. It's just being. I'm not saying on the outside, because I'm fortunate. I get to cover sports in the town that I grew up rooting for all these teams. But the Redskins have always been number one. And I replied to something or commented on something. John Kime, ESPN, does a great job, covers the Redskins, has for years. A couple of weeks ago, tweeted something about the Redskins or something. And I think my response was something along the Ben Crenshaw line, like, I got a good feeling about this. And his reply to me, his reply to me was, uh-oh, you know, like, I don't know. I do. I talk to, and I talk about I saw the Kirk Cousins tweet yesterday, or 2 days ago. Nice to be spinning the ball again. He's wearing the purple and gold. Everything. Good for him. I really like adding Alex Smith. Maybe I'm just getting caught up in the wave of it's nice not to have any drama anymore, because that's been a drama-free team for the most part on the field. There's been some, issues off the field for them. But on the field, adding him, the draft pick out of Alabama, you bring another Deron Payne in, you bring another, they've got two young, just budding stars now on the defensive line. They've drafted a lot of defense. They're using a lot of young guys other than Josh Norman. They're in great shape there. The Darius Geis pick, I mean, that's my watch a second round steal for them in need of a running back. And there's a lot of hype, and there will be, about Saquon Barkley with the Giants. If Darius Geis is the player I think he is, he's going to be right there with them because they're going to wear that dude out in the backfield. He is the best running back the Redskins have had, you know, going back to when they were winning Super Bowls. And they were always kind of a team that didn't draft a guy and had like Emmitt Smith or something like that. It was always either Riggo back in the day or Steven Davis when they were, you know, decent in the early 90s, or George Rogers that one year when they won a Super Bowl. So it was always guys like that. I love the Darius Geis pick. They're young. They were a good defense last year until everybody started getting injured. So I love Jerry Jones, and I think he's right in this instance too. Look, the Eagles are obviously the team to beat. They got Carson Wentz coming back. That's obviously the team to beat, not only in that division, in the NFC. There's a lot of good teams, I realize. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have his favorite target anymore. Jordy Nelson's playing with the Raiders now, and I love Aaron Rodgers. But that's – who are the Cowboys going to throw to? I know Dez may be done, and I think the rest of the league probably feels that way with what's going on. But are they going to just hand the ball to Ezekiel Elliott 58 times a game? I mean, who's he throwing to now? Is Cole Beasley going to be 110 catch guy? I mean, and the Giants, I think, I still think the Giants are a mess. And I think, look, they made their decision that we're riding with Eli for a couple more years. Well, that decision could look really bad really quickly if that, you know, doesn't happen. They got Beckham coming back, all that. And Drew Brees still lives in New Orleans. That's still the team. I love the Redskins. I love what they've been doing last 2 years in the draft. They're young. They're athletic. They're really good on defense. They've got an offensive line. They've had an offensive line that's good enough to win with for a couple of years. Again, last year, a lot of guys got hurt, but that's always a factor in sports. I love the Alex Smith dynamic. There's an adult behind center now. There's an adult in that team. Everybody's talking about leadership, and that's not a knock against anybody else, but Alex Smith is a guy that's been through 18,000 different offensive coordinators in his career.
Yeah.
He's found something late in his career. Andy Reid is a great quarterback coach. And there's no doubt working with him the last 2 or 3 years has been a huge benefit to him. And Jay Gruden is just as good an offensive coach as there is in the NFL. We'll see if that translates into being a winning head coach. It hasn't yet, but that dude can dial some stuff up, and there's no doubt that's probably the best quarterback he's worked with in his career, going back to Andy Dalton in Cincinnati and all that stuff. They got a guy they want, and everybody wants to be here, and that's nice. And maybe some of the vibe of the Caps can carry over. I love the Redskins this year. I do. I think people are sleeping on them. I think that's a team that can make the playoffs, certainly. And, you know, healthy, I think there's a lot of questions around the NFC. And you got a Super Bowl champ with a guy coming off a knee injury. I know they've still got the guy that won, you know, the MVP and won the Super Bowl for him there as a backup plan. But that's Carson Wentz's team. And it's really tough to come off those big injuries. And we'll see pretty quickly. Doesn't take long. It takes about 2 weeks for things to start settling out in the NFL. And we are less than 13 Sundays away from it. 12 Sundays as of this coming Sunday away from the opening.
But who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting? I am.
Yeah, exactly. Earl, thanks so much. We do appreciate it as always.
Thanks, buddy.
Busy day today.
We appreciate
it. Thanks for taking time. We'll have you on again real soon, okay?
Hashtag all caps.
There you go. Thanks, Earl. Earl. See you, man.
Okay, bye.
Earl Forsey, voice of PGA Tour Radio, and finally gets a little
and
bit of time
the Redskins
off. Like he's going to catch up on movies, but yeah.
He's going to catch up on movies. He needs to watch Seabiscuit. I watched Seabiscuit recently.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, what a great movie. What a great – Jeff Bridges is such a good actor, too.
One of the great underdog stories of all time in sports, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Seabiscuit, the little horse, could do anything.
Yeah,
Was it War Admiral? Was that the big
War Admiral was the big horse War in those Admiral? Days. Yeah, that was the Triple Crown winner that just got skunked in the stakes race. And Santa Anita.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Great movie.
Hey, Frank, let's take a quick break here. We got Bob Bupka who's going to be joining us from Shinnecock, and can't wait to get the environment. And Bob brings the voice and everything of Long Island to the show, so it'll be perfect. So Everybody go get a cup of coffee, come back, and join us with Bob Bubka. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Frank, join us from the Nashville studios. I'm in the Dallas studios, and we just had Earl Forsey on from Washington, D.C., and we continue to navigate the globe on this show as we go. We are Golf Talk America, and we are all over the place. And right now we're going to our good friend Bob Bubka, who is where everybody who loves golf wishes they were right now, and that is at Shinnecock, site of the 118th U.S. Open that will be kicking off on Thursday. With so much excitement and pageantry and everything else, the national championship, and certainly one of the great golf tournaments of the year, and this is a very special week. So, Bob, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. You're back in your old stomping grounds. You grew up just 10 miles or so from there, right?
Yeah, I did, Tim, and good to be back on with you, Frank. And, you know, I was thinking back earlier today. I can remember, like it was yesterday, showing up here at Shinnecock back in 1986, which was the second U.S. Open. They did hold one here in 1896. And no, Tim, don't say I covered that one too, because I did not. But, you know, 86, and then we came back in 95, and most recently in 04, and now we're here in 2018. But the quality of this golf course speaks for itself. Matter of fact, the USGA has already announced that 2026, it will be coming back here again. So they're recognizing, you know, the quality of the tests that can be provided here. Interesting to note, the clubhouse, a historic clubhouse, first clubhouse ever built in America, was constructed right here at Shinnecock. So all systems are go. Tiger Woods' yacht, 150-footer, is in the exact town that I grew up in, a little place called Sag Harbor, and Tiger has a short commute over to the golf course every day, and he did something, you know, a few weeks back that I don't think anybody would ever think could happen, but I was talking to the head pro here at Shinnecock. He's been here 12 years, a fellow by the name of Jack Druger, and Jack, actually, we were on the air. I was doing some local radio station here, and Jack said a few weeks ago he was in his pro shop, and a gentleman walked in the front door. He didn't pay much attention. He was looking at a text message, and then when he finally looked up, he was surprised to see that it was Tiger Woods, and Tiger said, "Hi, I'm Tiger Woods." Jack said, "No, I don't think you have to introduce yourself." But Jack said, "Can I help you?" And Tiger said, "You doing anything in the morning, Pro?" And Pro said, "Why?" And Tiger said, "I'd like you to play 18 holes with me." So Jack, of course, jumped at that. And the thing that made Jack the proudest, he told me when they were walking up 18, Tiger said, "How about we grab some lunch and we go play another 18? So what Tiger was doing, he was trying to solicit from the head professional here any little nugget, any little jewel about the golf course, about the greens, about the bunkers. And he said Tiger literally was like a sponge. And he carried it to the umpteenth degree. I think Tiger was very smart because Jack told me that Tiger really didn't putt when they were on the greens. And Jack, after a few holes, said, "Why aren't you putting?" And Tiger said, "Well, Pro, you know, when we come back here for the U.S. Open, the greens are going to be a lot faster, and I don't want to get any untrue lines into my brain on these putts. So I'm really not here to worry about the greens. I'll worry about those when I come back in, you know, to contest in this 118th Open. But I just wanted to get knowledge about the golf course from you." So Tiger looking get a little bit of edge, trying to win his first major since 2008, so a 10-year absence from the winner's circle for Tiger Woods.
Did Bob, did Pro have anything to say about how Tiger played?
Good question, Frank. I said, "Well, what did you think, Jack?" And he said, Bob, he said, I was amazed at the quality of shots that Tiger was hitting, not only off the tee, but into the greens. He said that it seemed like Tiger, Shinnecock was an ideal fit. It was like Tiger's game had been taken to a tailor and a little tuck here, a little tuck there. And the end product was Tiger left very, very happy with Ooh. The ability that he had at the time to strike the golf ball. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, that ultimate golf lover's dream is going to come true on Sunday afternoon with Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods in the last twosome of the day. It would by far be the most watched sporting event in the history of the world of sport.
Wow. No doubt. Tim, can you imagine?
I think so many people are pulling for that, Bob, and all the fans that are out there would love to see Sunday come down and have Tiger and any number of another few guys that are up there, whether they're unknowns or if it's Spieth and Rory and Dustin and all the big names. I think it would be amazing because, quite honestly, Bob, it doesn't seem like we've had, while we have those guys playing well week after week, they kind of take turns. We haven't seen an awful lot of tournaments where you've seen the big name guys, those top 10 guys, where it's Bubba and Spieth and Tiger and Dustin all within a few shots of each other. That would be pretty amazing, wouldn't it, come Sunday?
Yeah, very, very well said, Mr. Matthews. And, you know, it's hard to have that happen. I mean, you know, so at this juncture, it's more of a wish. I mean, probably Las Vegas would tell us that there's greater odds of Phil and Tiger missing the cut than they would be Tiger and Phil being, you know, in the last twosome on Sunday. Interesting to note, you know, I did broadcast from the merchandise tent the previous 4 days, last week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and literally was fascinated by how many players I would see come in the merchandise tent buying stuff, buying shirts, buying hats. You know, these guys get everything for free, but yet they wanted the Shinnecock logo. The one that I really remember, I'm broadcasting live, and a gentleman comes up, and he's got a baby strapped to his chest, and I said, good golly. I said, Brandon, how you doing? It was Brandon Grace. He said, well, I'm babysitting right now. I said, how about coming on the air with me? He said, sure. So I hand him a mic. We're on about 2 or 3 minutes. The baby starts to cry. Brandon says, I got to go now. My baby is just waking up. I said, okay. I mean, it was, you know, local radio certainly at its best. But I will say this much. You know, I've been to Fan Court, which is a resort area in South Africa where Brandon Grace is from. And the golf courses down there are very similar to what we have here at Shinnecock. So Brandon Grace says he feels very comfortable here, and certainly with his talent, he would not be a big surprise if come Sunday night he's holding the winning trophy.
You know, Bob, it sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but from the setup the USGA is doing on this golf course, it looks like they're taking the big bombers, and they're going to just tighten those fairways up just a little bit, and that rough's going to be tough. And it may take, at least some commentators have said, it may take the big bomber long ball maybe and throttle that back a little bit for this tournament.
Well, you know, a lot of that's going to depend on how firm the golf course is, Frank. Both of you guys have been around this game. You know, the one thing that they can't control, obviously, is Mother Nature. The sure. latest forecast that I was informed of was for some thunderstorms to move into the area tomorrow, which certainly would take a lot of fire out of this golf course. And it's amazing to me that there's a new trend now in golf where the powers to be have made this determination that birdies and eagles, people rather see that than pars and bogeys. So you're witnessing the golf courses being set up a lot easier than they used to be. The U.S. Open always was regarded as a grueling test of golf, a thorough examination. Well, when I tell you the fairways, Frank, this year are wider than they were in 1986. I mean, when I look at the quality of the athlete, the conditioning, the equipment that's utilized now, even the golf ball, I cannot rationalize in my head why fairways would be wider now than they were in 1986. So, but, you know, and I think it's derived, quite frankly, from the Masters. They came up with this formula on Sunday. They wanted excitement, so they wanted to see birdies and bogeys, so the golf course is set up easier on Sunday than it is during the week. And the other governing bodies have really followed suit. I mean, case in point, a year ago, Royal Birkdale, you know, Brandon Grace, we talked about it. I mean, he shot 62 in round three. I was with several members of Royal Birkdale that night, and I asked them how they felt about a player shooting 62 on their golf course. And I was informed that the golf course played shorter for the third round of the Open Championship than it does for the members when they play. And I'm scratching my head saying, how can that possibly be? But that's the trend. And what we're going to see here at Maidstone, Shinnecock, if we don't get some wind, if we do not get wind, and it doesn't look like there is going to be maybe a chance on Thursday, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it'll definitely be double digits under par winning when it was tradition years and years ago. If you could shoot even par at a U.S. Open venue for 72 holes, you were going to walk away with the trophy. But there's been a change in philosophy coming from the top, and that's just the way the courses are being set up differently.
We're talking with Bob Bupka, host, of course, of The Grill Room, and you can hear Bob on TuneIn Radio and many, many other platforms. And, Bob, how many we've gone through this before, but I always lose count. How many major championships in golf have you attended?
Well, I'm proud to say this is my 124th, but that really doesn't deserve any recognition other than the fact that anybody hearing that will simply say, and they'd be very accurate, well, he's just old.
but it leads me to this, though, is I guess, and what was the very first one that you went to, do you remember, major?
I attended one in 1982. That actually happened to be a women's open, but you know, it was a major. So
and so do you see a lot of the same people? I mean, is it kind of an old home week for you to see some Dan Jenkins kind of people and guys that have been there for as many years as you or as close as many years?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, it's quite a traveling circus, as you guys are both certainly well aware of. I mean, people that cover golf, you know, it's really closer to a traveling circus than anything else. And, all of us are family. I mean, for me, to be able to stay at my brother, younger brother, Tom Bupker, is, he lives out here, retired school teacher, a member of the golf course right next door to Shinnecock, Southampton. And, it's a thrill to be here at Shinnecock, and it's even a bigger thrill for Janice, our executive producer for this operation, to be able to stay with my brother and his wife. So, this is a win-win situation, and what makes it even better, members of the media that stayed at the media hotel yesterday, they took them 3 hours and 5 minutes to get to the golf course.
Wow.
It took us about 15 minutes to get to the golf course. So,
and you were mentioning too, Bob, I think last time we were talking to you, a tournament, maybe it was last year or something else in the Hamptons area. The prices of hotels, while you're fortunate to have your brother there, I guess, a normal hotel that would be $150, doesn't it like quadruple or something as they prepare for the U.S. Open? I mean, it's expensive to go and follow or cover that tournament up there, isn't it?
Well, one of the guests I had on the local radio station is the property manager for a lovely motel. It's on the water, but it's the bay, and there's some boats, so the scenery is pretty attractive. you know, anywhere else, it would be strictly referred to as a run-of-the-mill motel, but it's located in Sag Harbor. And this Saturday night, in case you want to fly in, Tim, the room rate will be $2,000. Thank you very much. No breakfast included.
Wow. Well, I would think, Tim, that Tiger, you know, would let you stay with us on on his boat.
With us, yeah. I'll be there.
With us there, yeah. The privacy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Tiger does have his boat there. How far away is his boat anchored, if you will?
Well, Tiger's boat is actually in the community that I grew up in, a lovely place called Sag Harbor that for years it was very famous because back in 1840, it was the largest whaling port in the United States. A huge number of whaling ships would depart from Sag Harbor. They'd go out to sea for 3, 4, 5 months at a time. Whale oil was a very valuable commodity. They'd come back to Sag Harbor. They'd stay about a month. They'd fix up the ship a little bit. They'd rest, and then they'd go out for another 3, 4, 5 months.
Wow.
And so they have a marvelous marina there and some really, really nice boats. I'll say this much. Tiger's not, his 150-foot yacht is nowhere near closest to being the biggest yacht that's in this harbor. So wow. Tiger may feel a little inferior, but he's got a lovely spot. And he was up the other day at 7 in the morning, walked into a local coffee shop, and of course everybody, you know, just couldn't believe what they were watching. But it's a fascinating place to grow up. It afforded me the opportunity as I started to travel around the world of really being able to convince people how smart I was, because I would always say that, you know, I finished in the top 20 in my graduating class in high school. Of course, there were only 14 seniors the year I graduated, so it really wasn't that much of an accomplishment.
That sounds a lot like my school. It really does. Hey, Bob, so, I mean, I know the buzz is crazy up there this week. I've got to take Mark Leishman as my long shot. He's on the books at 50-1 right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark Leishman is
a player.
He's a player. He's the prototype of somebody that can do well. Actually, in the merchandise tent, I was able to catch up with Matt Kuchar, who I think is long overdue, you know, to break into the, you know, major winner category. And I've known Matt since his amateur days. I was with him when he won the U.S. Amateur back in 1998 in Chicago. And I know his mom and dad, his father Peter, used to caddy for Matt. And I said, Matt, you got a couple of minutes. I said, you know, I am from here, and I've played this golf course so many times. And I said, there's a couple of secrets about Shinnecock, and I can't think of anybody more deserving to get to victory. And the fascinating part about Shinnecock, it's amazing in that, beginning right at the first hole, when you get on the first tee, it's very easy to visualize where you're supposed to hit the golf ball. And it's almost like a neon sign on the first hole saying, hit me here. And then when you accomplish that, you stand in the fairway and you can see the where you should, you know, come into the hole location. Very simple. And if you do that on a regular basis for 18 holes, you'll walk off and say, wow, that's the easiest golf course I've ever played. Now, if you don't hit it where it's telling you to hit it, you'll walk off saying, this is the hardest golf course I've played. And what I stressed to Matt, I said, please, when you get on the tee, let it deliver its message. You know, just stare down that fairway. It'll come floating back to you where you have to position your golf ball. Have patience and let Shinnecock tell its story to you and if you read it properly, you will win. I mean, it was almost tears in Matt's eyes. He was so happy to hear me sharing that with him. I mean, I played here competitively, played fairly well a couple of times. You know, I hate to even think what I used to shoot, because I couldn't shoot that in nine holes now. So, but it is. It's a design that really has stood the test of time. And any of the great listeners of Golf Talk America, I would say this much. If you love this game and an opportunity presents itself for you to be able to play around at Shinnecock, and certainly it's not easy, but it can be done, please take advantage of it. And ironically enough, right next door to Shinnecock is another absolutely incredible place to play golf called National Golf Links of America. And 35 years ago, I was with Ben Crenshaw, and we were going from Shinnecock over to National. And Ben Crenshaw said to me, "Bob, Shinnecock and National are the two finest golf courses in the world that touch one another." I was just with Ben at the Byron Nelson in your neck of the woods, Tim, out in Dallas, and I had an opportunity to catch up with Ben for a little bit of a conversation. I said, "I'm excited about going back to Shinnecock." I said, "Do you remember what you told me?" He said, "I certainly do, Bob." And he said, "I'm going to tell it to you right now. Still, in this day and age, Shinnecock and National, two finest golf courses in the world that touch one another. And when it comes from a historian like Ben Crenshaw, it carries a lot of weight."
Strong. just flat strong.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that really is. Bob's got great stories.
Yeah, you've got a great week ahead of you as well. And we're all excited to see, as every golf fan is, for the majors, how this all plays out, because it could be a Brooks Koepka kind of thing. It could be we haven't even mentioned Phil Mickelson going for the career Grand Slam, but we keep saying that. He gets older. I don't know how much more realistic it can get that maybe that's going to pass him by. But your final thoughts, Bob, if you could. If Phil can get and at least be competitive and be there Sunday within, as we've all seen in past, guys have come from 6-7 shots back to win majors. To see Phil have at least an outside chance of doing this would be really, really special right there at Shinnecock, wouldn't it?
Well, in 04, he did finish second. The 16th hole here at Shinnecock's a par 5. Phil bogeyed that hole in 04. So you can use your imagination. Had things going a little bit different on that par 5, it might have been Phil Mickelson, the winner here, instead of Retief Goosen. Phil shot 65 this past Sunday down in Memphis, and congratulations to the people with the brand new date moving to August. Huge. But it's going to be a World Golf Championship event. I know, Frank, you got to be extremely proud of all the great work they do for St. Jude, and now to be elevated to a World Golf Championship event. Something very special. But Phil did shoot 65 on Sunday, so he arrived here. And he's been up here a few times over the last few months playing some practice rounds. He likes this golf course. He turns 48 on Saturday. He'd love to give himself the greatest birthday present of all, to become the sixth player in the history of this great sport to have won all four major championships. What an honor that would be.
Yeah,
and I think, when you look at the career of Phil Mickelson, people are surprised that, you know, he's never been the number one money winner. He's never been ranked number one in the world. Obviously, all due to the unfortunate timing to play at the same time Tiger Woods played. Phil's a fan favorite here in the New York area. We could have some tremendous excitement come this weekend.
Yep, well said, well said. It looks like it's going to shape up to be a phenomenal week of golf, and can't wait for it all to get started on Thursday there at Shinnecock. Bob, we appreciate your time once again and your insight, especially the close insight to that area right there in the Hamptons and at Shinnecock. And we look forward to talking next week. So we'll see what all happens. We'll talk to you next week and see how smart or not so smart the three of us are about what might happen. this weekend. But
I know two of us are smart, that's for sure.
I'm not saying a word.
I don't know which two. But
I'm not saying
smart.
A word.
Hey, take care, guys.
Bob, thanks so much. Hey, keep up the good work with Vertical Groove, too. Vertical Groove Driver. Great product.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Take care, Bob.
All right. Bob Lumpka, host of The Grill Room. Just check him out. He's got his podcast going. And you can find out all the great things. Bob travels everywhere.
Yeah, he does. Bob's all over the place.
A lot of different tournaments, but Bob's, he's at the Byron Nelson. He's every tournament that's a big tournament or one that he wants to go to, he's there. So anyway, it looks like it'd be pretty fun. I can't wait to cover this. We'll be back on in a couple of days. I think maybe Thursday, Frank. We'll be back
this week we'll be covering the U.S. Open Thursday, pretty Friday. Extensively. Yeah. We have a crew up there. So Hey, by the way, Bob, playing up there in his hometown, I have to tell you that while I was in Memphis last week, I took a ride across the river into Arkansas and went to the country club that I grew up at and learned to play golf at. And just pulled in, walked in the pro shop, and said, told my name to the pro, and we talked a minute, and an old buddy from Memphis, big farmer there, Joe Beretti Jr., came out of the back and said hello to me, and we had about an hour and a half conversation just about the old days growing up there. Of course, like I said, Bob grew up in the Hamptons. But I grew up in northeastern Arkansas in cotton fields and soybean fields with a lot of farmers, but some great golf. It's old Meadowbrook Country Club in West Memphis, Arkansas. And so before I left, the pro and Joe pulled out a bunch of swag and gave it to me from my old club. And I appreciate that. So a shout out to Joe Beretti Jr. and to Mark Cook, who's their golf professional there. Thank you all so much for your hospitality while I was in Memphis. And I'll be back to play golf with you. Beretti was the club champion there a lot. So, Joe, you give me a stroke a hole, and we got a bet.
Very nice. There you go.
But it was fun. And, of course, I went to Poncho's and got some more cheese dip.
Yeah. Always.
And
always,
some salsa. Always. And some. They have the best mustard sauce. It's a sweet mustard sauce that you pour in your tacos. Awesome. Awesome sauce. So my refrigerator is full of heart-healthy ponchos.
Hey, and by the way, a shout-out to Club Corp. Yesterday I was at Glen Eagles in Plano, just north of here, and we'll be doing some more stuff with Club Corp, but they just reopened the King's Course, one of their courses that had been under some renovations, and it looked beautiful. We had a great time out there playing at Glen Eagles. But thank you so much to the people at Club Corp, and like I said, we'll be talking more about Club Corp and on the shows here coming up in the very near future.
We will. Our home course here in Nashville was going to be Bluegrass Country Club. So Club Corp, we're working with them right now, along with Secret Golf. We failed to mention Steve Elkington of Secret Golf, and Diane Knox, Hi Noxie, and Jay. We're doing a lot of work together with Club Corp, as well as other things. So stay tuned to us for all that. There's a lot happening at GTA and Secret Golf this year, and more to come. So there you
perfect,
go.
Perfect. All right. Time for the music, Blake.
What music?
We
don't have any music.
We got to move on here.
The Heimerdinger this weekend. I'm emceeing the event and playing in it. Mike Heimerdinger for cancer, charity for cancer, former NFL coach here in Memphis. So that's going to be fun.
Perfect. All right. We appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, we love each and every one of you. Thanks to Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio and Bob Bupka with the Grill Room for joining us today. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody. Join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.